Good morning, gentlemen. How are you? Happy Halloween.
Boo. That's exactly right. I love your costume. Looking good here on a Tuesday morning. You should see what Keith's wearing. It's pretty good. It's homemade.
Yeah.
You guys are all decked out today.
Huh? That's exactly
it's
right.
It's amazing what you do with the garbage bag.
If you've seen Dumber Dumber, the powder blue and orange tuxedos with the top hats and canes, just think of something in that area there. Thanks for joining us this morning. We really appreciate it. And we know that you've been out and about talking to folks in the downtown area about the food and beverage tax and obviously how that's going to affect the convention center expansion and everything else moving forward. Let's just start there and then we'll work our way into the details. How long have you been have you been hitting the streets and what have you heard from people you've ran into?
So I started this initiative last week and I thought it was important to go out and talk to the people who this potential tax could really affect in their businesses and their day-to-day lives. And over the decades, we've heard the different arguments for and against the convention center and the food and beverage tax. And really, I just wanted to get out and, see how this was going to affect people's lives, the ordinary, everyday, typical Monroe County resident. So that was really my goal with this. And I got to tell you, the response that I've had has just been, I think, terrific so far. I've still got a lot of work to do, and what I'm doing now is kind of keeping my Friday afternoons open between the hours of 2 p.m. and 5 p.m. And a lot of these businesses and agencies that I'm visiting with are in my district, District 4 in the downtown area, so thought it was important to go out and just have some one-on-one conversations with people and see what they're thinking about this. And I've had some, some really positive feedback, and it's probably a little too early to draw any conclusions at this point. Still a lot of people to talk to, but I'm really pleased with the direction that things are going.
Now, you say it's too early to draw conclusions, and I completely agree with that if you've just started this. I think the one thing that the public is kind of confused, not confused, maybe in the dark about is there's really not a steady timeline, or if there is, I'm missing it, on how this whole process is going to go on. Are you on the Convention Center Committee? Is that commission? That's correct, right?
Right. I was on the advisory commission, and as far as I know, the work of the commission is completed, and that the result of that was to determine the best, most qualified developer for the project and the site planning. So we've got to that point now. The county council is going to have to determine and wade through the different funding options. And I think, obviously, the one of the options out there is the food and beverage tax option, and, among many other options, too. And so we're just kind of looking at this and, seeing what would be the best possible funding mechanism or combination of things to fund the expansion.
I like the combination word. I think that's the one that's going to build more consensus. Do you think that's going to be the case? But is there enough ammunition there to have it from multiple fields?
Well, we'll see. It's going to take some work, and I think that's why it's important to take our time with this and to really look and turn over every stone and see what the options are. I tend to agree. I like a hybrid type of package to see if we could bundle some different things together and come up with the funding that would be necessary to expand the convention center. My general sense is that all members of county council are supportive of convention center expansion. The big question is, how are we going to fund it?
Eric, one of the things that on the food and beverage tax, obviously you present that on the basis that, well, these are the people that come into town from out of town and they're people in for the football weekends, basketball weekends, that kind of thing. But the reality is it's also the local people who go out to eat. What are you hearing from people when you talk to them about their feelings about using a food and beverage tax? What are they telling you?
Yeah, and I think you're right. A lot of different perspectives on that, but, my sense is that a food and beverage tax, would apply, obviously, to visitors and residents, and I think it would impact about 99.9% of the residents in Monroe County. One of the questions that I always ask people, I have a few questions that I ask people when I talk to them, and, I want to know, how often do you go out to eat?
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't heard one person say that they haven't been out to eat. Usually the response is within the last week they had done something to that effect. But I think, you know, in this day and age, when you have a lot of households, where you have two, you know, parents, both of them are working and kids to take care of, it is really difficult for families to find the time to go to the grocery store every week and prepare and plan out and cook meals for breakfast, lunch, and dinner 365 days a year. So
doesn't happen. That's absolutely true.
Yeah,
it doesn't happen.
And so that's a lot of what I've been hearing, and I think it's some good feedback. You know, I think a lot of times folks have to get, you know, me and my family, I've got a 5-year-old daughter. My wife works, I work. We work some long hours sometimes. You know, when our 5-year-old is hungry, sometimes we just have to run down to Wendy's and pick up some chicken nuggets.
Boy, you read my book.
It's kind of a, you know, I don't know how I feel about the argument that, you know, this is a choice that people make. I think often, you know, it's out of necessity. People's time is a resource, and it's limited just like their money is. And so, you know, for some people, it's, you know, you have to go out to eat sometimes.
Absolutely right. Eric Spoonmore is our guest this morning. He sits on the county council and is polling his constituents in District 4 about how this can work. What have been some of the major misconceptions you've ran into that you're hearing where you say, well, that's just not true? Because there's always goofy information out there at some points. But we want to make sure we talk to you and Marty Hawk and John Weikart and Mick Renheiser. We're trying to get everybody the information. So if there's anything you want to clear up, let us clear it up, because I think some people get confused on this. How the food and beverage tax would be collected and how it's distributed, is that probably the main hiccup in all of this?
You know, I think there is there may be some sort of a perception out there that, you know, this is a done deal, and that is not the case at all. You know, we have had there's two county council members who have already publicly stated they're opposed to a food and beverage tax. The rest of us, I think, are very much engaged in substantive conversations with our constituents on a day-to-day basis about this issue. And for us and me in particular, you know, those conversations with that we have with residents are going to be the most compelling information that we get when we formulate our decisions on this. So we're very much interested in hearing feedback from residents. That's why I'm going out and meeting with people one-on-one. I think, you know, a lot of times for people, it can be intimidating when you want to speak your mind up or when you want to speak up on an issue and you have to go in and engage elected officials on their turf in a public meeting and, you know, speak on record, on camera. And some folks, you know, just don't want to do that. So this gives them an opportunity to let their thoughts known about this and, you know, off record, and we can take all that information into consideration. So, yeah, I want to clear that out. This is not a done deal. We're very much in the information gathering stage of this, and we'll be taking it all into consideration. The way that the tax would be collected is essentially that, you know, any taxable food now, if you're paying sales tax, the 7% Indiana state sales tax on food and beverage now, that would be subject to the additional 1% food and beverage tax that would be applied. So that money would, it's my understanding, would be sent up to the state along with the rest of the sales tax, and then the state would divvy it up and send the county back its share of the 1%. The estimates that we're hearing now is that this, on an annual basis, could generate anywhere between $2.5 million to $3 million in additional revenue that could be applied to the expansion of the convention center. So we're not talking about small change here. And over the course of many, many years, this really starts to add up. And it would probably, you know, in my estimation, I don't know this for sure, but it would be one of the biggest projects that we've ever done in Monroe County.
Now, Eric, in terms of the tax, the 1%, is that finite? Is that absolute? You can't make it more than 1%?
The way that the legislation, and that's a great question, Keith, the way that the legislation is written is that this has to be 1%. So
okay.
It cannot be a fraction of or any lesser amount.
So if you go out and you're doing a $10 dinner, you know, somebody like me by myself, it's 1% of
$10. 1% $10 extra.
I want to hang out with Keith. I want to know where he's getting dinner for $10. Gee whiz.
You go to the hamburger places.
Well, it'd be at Wendy's. Yeah, that's exactly
that's right.
And if you have more than one kid, that's not the case. Eric Spoonmore is our guest this morning, county councilman checking in with us. Now, the reason people ask about timeline and things of the such, how long is your development partner going to stick around and wait for this? This has to be something that has to move at some point, doesn't it?
Sure. And, you know, I hope that they would be interested and willing and wanting to wait around for as long as it takes for the public to feel comfortable about us being able to make a decision on this. I think ultimately, you know, the people that I serve are the people here in Bloomington. And so we want to make sure in Monroe County, and we want to make sure that, you know, everybody's comfortable on this. And I think it's important to take our time with this. And I would hope that the developer would be understanding of that as well.
One of the things that came out in the news in the last week was that the hotel entrepreneur had a bankruptcy. How do you view all of that?
Yeah, that's a good question. And it looks like, you know, from what I understand, I'm not an attorney or a banker, so I'm a little bit at sea with with some of that stuff. But, you know, from what I understand, there were some experts that had weighed in on that particular situation. It looks like it was really just a function of the bad economy at the time.
Right.
The bank that the developer had been working with had some challenges and some problems, and unfortunately those things were out of the developer's control, and he had to suffer some issues as a result of that. But it looked like, from what I understand, he was able to rebound from that very well.
I thought I read at some point you were surprised there weren't more bids for this project. Is that still something that maybe makes the public a little uneasy when they didn't see people lining up to get to behind this can't miss opportunity?
Yeah, that's another sentiment that I've been hearing as well. And, you know, I have been a little flummoxed by that. And it's kind of interesting. And I'm not quite sure what led to that. It may be that, you know, developers want to know that there's going to be some financing secured and in place and guaranteed before they take the time to...
A little bit of chicken and the egg?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it was a little disappointing, I guess, to see only two submitted proposals for that. But, yeah, it's unfortunate, but...
one's better than nothing, and we understand
right.
But when we talk about taking money out of people's pockets, we have to paint the picture. You have to paint the picture of what is the greater good and what is the benefit of it. The interesting point, I think, is there are people that still have concerns, and there are people that think this is just an absolute slam dunk. What do you think is the – where is the middle here? Why is it so polarizing in some degrees?
Well, this has been an ongoing conversation for decades in Monroe County, and it's been, you know, kind of contentious at times, and there's been a lot of back and forth between support and opposition, and, you know, I think people just are, you know, anytime that people are going to be expected to pay for something, they want to know what the return's going to be, and so I think that's the real case that needs to be made. What are the benefits going to be to the community for this? And that will ultimately, I think, kind of determine how this moves forward.
Back to the chicken and egg kind of thing, Eric. Does the hotel have to happen for the convention center to expand, or can the convention center expand without a hotel?
Well, that's a good question. I would think that it's going to require a hotel. Some of the issues that we've had, being able to secure adequate room blocks at the existing convention center and hotel space there have just not been, you know, at the level that we need. And so a new hotel with some additional amenities included with that, the argument is that would really assist and aid in that area for us.
Eric, if people want to get in touch with you on your Friday tours, what's the easiest way to do so?
And I do, and thank you, Glass, for asking that. I do want people to reach out and have happy to take phone calls. My personal cell phone number is on the Monroe County Council website. It is, and I'll happy to release that here. It's 812-219-1910. My email address is also on the Monroe County website. So anybody who is interested in discussing this, please let me know. I want to hear your thoughts. And I look forward to seeing how all this shapes up.
Excellent. And no end date on how long you're going to be talking to people, so just keep that phone ringing. If you want answers, if you want information on how this is going to affect you, your business, your community, we can help you out with all that.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
As long as there is interest, I am willing to talk.
What is the five-year-old going for as Halloween? Going as Halloween? Going?
Halloweening. This has been an ongoing argument in the house.
Good.
Over the last couple of weeks. So we've gone from a werewolf to a witch, and now we have settled on Wednesday from the Addams Family. And I thought that so this is kind of an interesting thing. My original plan was to in tribute to the zombie tax, get dressed up as one of those people from the characters from The Walking Dead and just roam around downtown.
But instead you get Wednesday on Tuesday. That's pretty good.
That's right.
Cover up the middle of your week. I'm not sure what my 7-year old has decided on. She's listening right now, so her mom will probably instant message me to remind me what she's going to be. But we had a little zombie sport cheerleader going on at one point, so we'll see what the final answer is. Hey, have a great Halloween. Be safe. We really appreciate your time of informing us on how people can get in touch with you in District 4 and learn more information about this, and we'll reach out to you down the road.
Well, great. Thank you so much. Right. Great to be with you guys.
Thanks, Eric.
Thank you. Thanks, Eric. Appreciate it. Eric Spoonmore, County Councilman.